Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, in the first half, we have March Madness Madness, and then one of the best guys, comedic guys in Hollywood, Judd Apatow, joins us. First, there's Geico. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance, they are all covered with Geico. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to Geico. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
Ladies and gentlemen, a new nut hath arrived. April ushers in the return of not just spring, but a new Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes a sample pack of Brewpub Jerky. Jerky, expertly crafted to drink with beer. We've also got a sample pack of Renewed Chaga Chino to make sure your coffee isn't just giving you jitters in the morning. When you're putting shrooms or snickerdoodle coffee mate in your cup of joe, make sure you rinse it after. This month, we've got a mug to remind you to do just that after you're done. And finally, you know the guys from Caviar Farm well enough by now. And this month, you'll get a $25 off coupon to be used site-wide at thecaviarfarm.com. We're not sure how we did it, but this entire box is just $25 at CorollaDrinks.com. Sign up for one or keep the shipments coming at CorollaDrinks.com. You're tuned to The Toolbox. Stepping up to the plate with another set of hits. We'll knock it out of the park and into the dark. Haven't had a drink since last Sunday, and I gotta tell you, this week of sobriety really felt good. Am I done drinking forever? Hell no. I'm an alcoholic, not a quitter. We're the station that puts the sin and synthesizer and the freak in your frequency. The federal government has been doing everything they can to increase illegal entry through our southern border. But now the office of the vice president has just announced this incentive. The 1 millionth illegal entrant to our country this year is going to win a free two-night stay in fabulous Laughlin, Nevada. Laughlin, because you can't afford Vegas and you don't want to put a shirt on. For 3 days and two nights, you'll bask in the fabulous neon lights. You just gambled with your life. Place your bet on Laughlin. You just crossed the Rio Grande. Now you'll be tubing down the Colorado River. And don't forget, you can dine at Olive Garden. Olive Garden, when you're here, you're a citizen. You'll also be entered for a VIP experience with Wayne Newton. You'll get tickets to the show, plus a private meet and greet, and a collectible poster to display in your new government-subsidized home. The 1 millionth wins. It's satire. Relax. There's no way they'd do that, right? Another beautiful day in the Southland. Temps slightly above average. We got to look at traffic coming up with dusty roads. Right now, we're on a rowboat to hell. We're fooling ourselves with sticks on the toolbox. See the world through your cynical light. You were troubled, young man, I can tell. You got it all in the palm of your hand. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Judd Apatow. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and rounds of the Rotten Tomatoes game, and March Madness Madness. And now, fun fact, the waxing scene in 40-year-old version was based on his ass. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
Great.
All right. Well, the great Judd Apatow will join us in the next period, but we got March Madness Madness and then all sorts of thoughts. And first, a quick follow-up in the column of I Know Nothing, So I Know Everything department. And why we thought the computer was going to solve everything, it is not. So I cannot tell you how many times I've said to people who were on a computer, and I went, I'm standing on the other side of the computer going, that can't be right. That can't be right. And they're going, oh, that's what it says. I just Google it. That's what it says. And I'm going, I don't know anything, but that's not right. You know what I mean? It's my, you know, it's like, oh, surf and turf for $4. You know what I mean? It's like, you got to go. It's not right.
That's right.
And I wonder if the computer is weakening that gene in people because they're so used to just, it's like the calculator fucked up people's ability to do math in their head. Yeah. This is doing a life math.
So I don't know how to get home anymore without my GPS.
Yes.
And I should be able to.
Does anyone remember anyone's phone number?
No.
No. Okay. So the other day when we're talking about Goldeneye and the Jamaican estate and with tennis courts and jet skis and villas and servants and Gina looked it up and said $1,000 a night.
Yeah. Each because, you know, each calendar date has a number in it.
Right.
And it was like, you know, between 675 and 920.
Right.
I was like, I'll take it.
Then I said, for that whole villa?
That's what it says.
And then Gina said, yep. And then I said, it must be by the room. It's virtually impossible. But you're dealing with Jamaica.
Yeah.
And people.
True. Could be a conversion thing.
People do that thing. Well, they do a thing all the time where they go, well, in Mexico, you can get this whole villa and servants for just, you know.
$30 a night.
Same price you'd pay for a hotel in Boston or whatever. So there's an element, international element. But then I said, it must be one room per night.
Now,
and then Gina said,
I said, this is what it says. And I think Chris and I should go in on a double honeymoon. So
she said, no.
Well,
it's for the whole thing.
I mean, I'm just looking at what the calendar says.
That's your opportunity to stop and go, this isn't a business model. You can't take 9 acres of luxury and do it for $1,000 a night.
So I was very intrigued by this steal of a price. So I did a little more investigating for personal reasons. Mm. And that is when I saw that, obviously, of course it's by room. And guess how many rooms there are? 22.
Really?
Yeah. Who knows? I could be wrong, but that's what the computer says. So you literally...
I just shared one room with all the juggies, so
That was my choice.
It's 11 or 12 of us.
So let me ask you.
Don't you feel ripped off?
Just one futon.
Did you guys literally buy out the entire resort?
Yeah.
22 rooms. If this computer is to be believed.
We got a group discount. It was off season.
Because my God, there's hut rooms. There's poolside. There's lagoon side. There's everything you can imagine.
We probably had about all in 16, 17 people there, maybe, and left a few rooms open. And we bought out the whole thing for, I don't know, 4 days or five days or something like that.
Well, we could adjust for inflation, I guess. But if we took the average, which was between, you know, $550 and $950, let's say $700 a night times 22.
Yeah. So it's 16 grand a year, a day.
Right.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Because I was so intrigued by this bargain steal that I looked this up on a personal level.
The problem with information is that it reminds me many years ago, I'm talking to my accountant. I know nothing of accounting or tax laws or any of that. And he's explaining, you know, you donate $50,000 toward Jimmy's kids' college fund, and then you can write off the $50,000, and then he donates $50,000, and he gets to write that off.
Are Jimmy's kids hurting for a college fund?
Not anymore.
No, and I remember saying to him, yeah, but you can only do that once. And he said, no, I think you can do it as many times as you want. I said, if you can do it as many times as you want, then what's to stop me from donating 50 grand to every human being I know's kid and writing it all off.
Let's give it a try. Let's start in studio.
And everyone could do that.
Yeah, we're working in a spiral fashion.
Right.
We'll be the proof of concept.
And then he goes, no, I think you can do it as many times as you want. And I'm just driving in my car. Remember where it was? And I'm like, I don't know anything. I know they're not going to let you do that. And he's like, pretty sure. And then, of course, I talked to him a day later. Yeah, check. You only do it. Yeah, by the way, when they tell you you can only do it once, they pretend it's their idea at that point.
Yeah.
Hey, I checked into that thing. Turns out, you know, it turns out it's what I said because
I don't know anything about that.
It doesn't make any sense. Just like this doesn't make it. Could you imagine $1,000 a night and you get 22 people in there? All right, everyone, we need $61 a night. We'll stay here for a week.
Well, and to be fair, question mark, I kind of was, and Brian, I don't know if you were too, but because this was like somebody's property at one point, I thought this was like one big house. I didn't know it was like different hotel rooms.
Well, you
so
know,
I was like, maybe.
There's another element here, Gina.
Uh-oh. That jet set too often?
Another dragon you need to slay.
Okay.
At some point, your personal wishes kick in.
That's true.
And now
you
gets
wanted a, to
now
why
gets,
do you think I looked into this on my own time?
It gets cloudy. You know what I mean? So
bias.
You go, oh, $1,000. Oh, no, it's for the whole place. Right. And then you get a little endorphin dump. And you go, fuck. Yeah. Fuck, we could go there. Now you're not approaching it from just a umpire calling balls and strikes. Now you got skin in the game.
Yes.
And you're going to try to steer it toward this outcome that you want it to. And that's another issue that's more global than it is Gina in Jamaica. But yeah, you got to worry, because then you start thinking like, oh, well, good. This is what I want.
It's perfect.
And yeah, it becomes a little, can be a little self-fulfilling prophecy. At a certain point, someone's going to stop you because they're not going to take it. But
at the door. Ma'am, you don't have this whole place.
Yes. But it's still, I mean, even for $700 a night or whatever the $695 was on the low end, if you could get enough people, enough friends, family, whatever in there, it's worth it. It is worth the best 4 days of your life. And you do whatever you want, because at night, it's like you don't have neighbors or anything. I mean, naked dance parties on the lawn in the rain. It doesn't matter. I remember Daniel brought his Lord Sitar. I can see for miles.
Fall in love?
Oh, Daniel always packed like weird eclectic stuff. It was kind of before, I guess, everyone had their computer loaded up with songs and the phone. And he found a Lord Sitar, and at some point, may have had a couple of pops, I found myself probably naked on the lawn in a rainstorm about 2 a.m. with Lord Sitar pumping, dancing my ass off. It's the best song ever written, because it's the best of the Who, and then it's the best of Lord Sitar. It's turn it up, Dawson.
It's a perfect prelude to debauchery.
It is. Thank you. Oh, when you're high, it's the greatest song ever written.
Sure. I see a lot of cameras going in and out with the pulsing different colors.
Go-go dancers.
Yeah. Adam shouting, I'm a golden god, and jumping into a pool.
Oh, yeah, the pool. I got a pool. You don't need it. You got the ocean, but... I was like, this is the greatest song I've ever heard in my life.
Amend that. Under the greatest circumstances.
Yeah, it's easy to fall in love with Lord Sitar when you're in Jamaica.
At Bond's place.
Play it as loud as you want. Is he still alive? The only problem with the sitar is you have to sit. Got the word sit in it.
Big Jim Sullivan.
That's his
name, I guess.
Oh, really?
Looks like if the computer's to be believed, he died in 2012.
Oh, boo.
Oh.
Something Robbie something.
Yeah. Oh, it gets worse. Real name, James Tompkins.
Oh, that's Lord Sitar?
Apparently, whose other alter ego was Big Jim Sullivan, and then his other alter ego was Lord Sitar.
Died in 2012?
Yeah.
And did he like tour and stuff? Did he open for people? Like, how does a sitar? I mean, this is a big band. I mean, this is a lot of money to take on the road.
Session guitarist, best known as a session guitarist.
So he wasn't strictly a sitar guy.
After in the 60s, after having learned to play the sitar, having been inspired by attending whatever
Maharishi Mahesh Yogi
via Lat Khan, he released an album Indian style called Sitar Beat, Lord Sitar, and for people like you, I guess it blew up. 1968.
Oh, wait a minute.
Is it different Lord Sitar?
No, no, but I had this thought, you know, when I was a kid, they called it sitting Indian style.
Yes.
You guys remember that?
That's what I thought it was called.
That's Native American Indian.
That's what I always thought. But if you play the sitar, you do sit that way when you play the sitar, and that's
sense.
An Indian instrument. So did we just... When I was a kid, if you said Indian, I don't care if you were talking about curry. I was like, the Comanches love curry. You know what I mean? Like, everything got pushed into American Indian.
Right.
Maybe the whole time we're saying Indian style, we meant Eastern.
And that's a very common meditation pose.
Yes.
Crisscross applesauce, as
the kids
say. We got
to bring it back.
And also, American Indians weren't really known for sitting. Like, it was... But
we'll sit around past the peace pipe.
Yeah.
That's the whole, you know, trope.
But we don't know in what way they were sitting.
Yeah, yeah.
They could have been lounging.
Now Chris has to look it up. My mind could be blown after all these years. I always thought American Indians, sitting Indians, but... You would, yes, you would practice your yoga and play your sitar.
Yeah. Sitar comes from the Persian word for three. Sit is three and tar is strings, so three strings. That's why they call it a sitar.
Okay, but also for Indian style?
Not the sitting part.
I have this.
It was not a joke.
The seated position that involves da-da-da-da-da. It's often compared to sukhanasana, or the easy pose in yoga.
Crystal Maybe there is some. Look a little more, Chris, on sitting Indian style, but we may have had our wrong Indians the entire time.
Before we even got to use it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
It's over.
Mm-hmm.
Crisscross applesauce.
Now I think Indian style American, and now they need their own style of sitting.
Right.
I would say that would be on a bar stool in front of a slot machine.
Oh,
like that could be, I'm sitting Indian style.
I can see how that'd be hurtful.
Anyone got more nickels?
I can see how that'd be hurtful.
Well, but I'm saying like a more accurate modern
day. No, I know
day,
what you're saying.
Because we got to replace it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we can't just leave them with no style of sitting.
I'm not, not understanding.
That would be offensive to leave them that way.
Look, I'm open to suggestions. I'm just saying like the most logical sitting.
Sure.
All right. So we got... March Madness coming up as well. Innovation. You know, I had to dig deep for this March Madness mask because it's all stuff I've talked about before.
Yeah,
so
that's
now
where
you
champions
gotta,
are made.
Right.
Got to dig deep. First, a theory. A theory of that I've been exploring a little bit, which is I'll start by playing a clip. I think yesterday was International Transgender Day.
Oh, everybody, happy National International Transgender
Day. And Biden gave
How does Sonny celebrate?
A speech on it. And he was talking about, well, we'll listen to the clip, but it's talking about the elderly transgender community.
Often overlooked.
The rarely discussed.
Yeah.
That's right.
Today, we're announcing even more steps, but there's always more work to do to end the epidemic of violence against transgender women of color and girls of color, to ensure transgender seniors can age with dignity,
All right. So we got to make sure transgender seniors age with dignity.
Sure.
And is it an epidemic against transgender? Statistically, it's not. Of course, it doesn't really exist statistically, but it's an epidemic. All right. And then I'll show you another clip, and then I'll get into my theory. Then we got Kamala Harris. She's talking about the anti-lynching law.
Please don't tell me she's giggling during it.
No.
To state unequivocally that lynching is and has always been a hate crime, and to make clear that the federal government may now prosecute these crimes as such. Lynching is not a relic of the past. Racial acts of terror still occur in our nation. And when they do, we must all have the courage to name them and hold the perpetrators to account.
I would say there's probably laws on the book about lynching somebody
I'd
that
like
would fall
so.
Under a hate crime law. But anyway, it just struck me.
Straight murder.
Would you like to know the last report? reported lynching as told by Google, if the computers to be believed, 1981, and before that I have 1945 and 1914.
And no one polished up that speech. Just, you could change it and just keep the same exact message just by saying, yes, lynching may be a relic of the past. However, there is – and then get into whatever
we
message
wanna,
you want.
We want to symbolically write this wrong.
Yeah.
Yes, but no. So then my theory. My theory is – talk about lynching and you're talking about – the elderly transgender living their life in peace and harmony. All right. That affects the amount of people that affects in this country, whether it's lynching or trans, the elderly transgender community is somewhere between jack and shit. Now, what does affect us is like gas prices, the border, Ukraine, inflation, schools and stuff like that. My theory is talk about invisible nonsense, and it can never be quantified. Right. Because if you talk about the border, someone will go, there's been X amount of border crossings in the month of March, and then compared to 2019, there were this many, and gas prices have gone up 57% in the last quarter alone. And then you go, inflation, a pound of beef used to be $6.99, now it's $9.99. That's all quantifiable, and you don't want to get into that shit, but transgender elderly and invisible lynchings, they're all just like up in the ether. And then it's a lot of talk about dignity, like you should be able to transition with dignity and safety and whatever it is. It's all subjects that are invisible, subjects that don't impact anybody, and you can pull everyone's attention toward this thing that doesn't exist and not talk about whatever does exist, which is fine if you're one of my mom's friends and you're sitting in the backyard in 1974 and getting high. But it's not good policy-wise. It's not good for like gas prices and borders and economy stuff. I want some more nuts and some bolts.
Well, that makes sense. And when you talk about this range is somewhere between jack and shit, I think that also applies to who's not on board with lynching being a hate crime, and who wants to hurt the elderly transgender? Nobody I've ever met.
No.
I've met a lot of people.
No. It's this constant beating of a drum of like it's sort of this thing where it's like it's used sometimes, but it's like if I just kept talking about how much Brian was beating his wife and how we need to stop, and then
is that still going
and
on?
Then you'd go, I don't beat my wife, and then they'd go, no, yeah, but it's an epidemic,
right,
and
anymore.
You're there, right. And it happens in Culver City. It's like you just keep bringing it up. It seems like we're living in a kind of a piece of shit society if it's 2022 and we must pass legislation to stop something that doesn't exist.
I feel bad.
Yes. The whole racist beat ourselves over the head society angle is starting to backfire, but it's just going to fuck people up. And kids especially have no fucking context. They just go, this is where we're living.
Well, and that's also why with the Will Smith, Chris Rock thing, it got so confusing so quickly because everybody was weighing in. It's a pop culture. I mean, this will go down in history. And even a friend of mine who's a comic, a female comic, said, this reminds me, you know, I've been a comic for 25 years and I had a restraining order against my ex-husband and I was afraid he'd show up in the audience and come up and smack me and whatever. And somebody, I think it was a pansexual, bi, cross, curious, I don't remember what her bio said, it was something like that, said, you're a white lady, so shut up and stay in your lane.
So that's you?
No, to my friend who was saying this. I'm like, but she's a comedian talking about not wanting to get hit while she's doing a joke. So how much more in her lane can she be?
It's just, well, the byproduct of this is going to be you can't talk. It's like I always said, like it's like the slippery slope of, well, we'll get Michael Strahan to interview Jesse Smollett or Robin. So it's like black people have to interview black people and or women have to interview women, like this thing. And then so naturally now if you pipe up, someone will go, oh, you're white. What do you have the right to it's not a good direction.
But I will say, you know where we've come the farthest? I was thinking about this the other day. The game show, the dating game show. Because remember, like, say, Love Connection, there would be a bunch of white dates and then there'd be like a sprinkling of black dates. Well, now we got The Bachelor, we got the diversity free for all, we got Love is Blind. I'm into it.
Isaac from The Love Boat couldn't. Once every three seasons, he got laid because one of the Pointer Sisters came onto the ship. He couldn't bang a white.
I didn't know those were the rules.
He couldn't fuck a white chick. And it was always all white.
Right.
So there's nothing for him to do.
God forbid.
Every episode, Doc and Gopher were chasing tail all around the fan deck. But fucking, well, poor Isaac just sitting there wiping that glass down in perpetuity. But every once in a while, the Pointer Sister would come on, and then he could try to get laid.
Well, who is laid more than the bartender? The guy making the drinks and, you know, hey,
chatting
tell me your troubles.
Yeah.
Not Isaac. Show, he had to stay in his ebony lane. All right, should we crank it up there, Dawson?
It's time once again for the big rants of March Madness. Yesterday, two tee-off triggers advanced out of the Irate 8, closing out the pop culture conference. Unlike on Hot Ones, DJ Khaled didn't quit and treated Colin Kaepernick the same way as the NFL, locking him out of the tournament. And in the final round of the big government conference, like Max Apata's burglarized luggage, the TSA sent the teachers union packing. Today, we finalize the Furious Four with two more Irate Eight matchups. First, for the Classics Conference crown, unrinsed coffee mugs versus backup beepers.
Unrinsed coffee mugs. Unrinsed coffee mugs, really, for me, is just a stitch in time saves nine. And nobody fucking is a seamstress anymore. Nobody does any stitching or mending anymore. So I would like to upgrade it to a rinse in time saves nine. It's really just saying, once that mug's by the sink or in the sink, spritz, done. It's not 30 seconds of your time, Your Highness. It's not 15 seconds. It's somewhere between 2.7 and 3.5 seconds of your goddamn time to stop the extra 10 minutes of fucking trying to rinse it out with your hands stuffed in the goddamn sink, rubbing at it like some sort of retarded kid in the corner of an asylum. And somebody needs to invent a dedicated rinse mug apparatus where it has a handle and it's flat, it's round on the bottom, and you just drop it in and try to do the old pepper mill for 10 seconds and it's done. It is a rinse in time saves nine lives of this podcast host. Backup beepers. Oh, innovation. First off, rules, then innovation. We don't need every fucking thing to have a backup beeper. This is a slippery slope. Your fucking kid's Tonka trunk doesn't need a fucking backup beeper. New rule. If the tire of the vehicle is lower than your knee, it cannot have a backup beeper. You can't get run over by something with a shopping cart wheel. You can get bumped or nudged. That's on you, but you can't be run over. But then I started thinking, what about the beep itself? It can't be avoided. It's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. It wakes me up every fucking Thursday. No more beeps. No more beeps. It's going to be scent related now. Oh. A spritz of cinnamon.
Ooh.
A 6-foot spritz of cinnamon compressed air. Out. Oh, I guess I better move. And for me, instead of being waking up by a fucking beep every morning, I would wake up and go, who's making pancakes? Is somebody making toast? French toast? A spritz of cinnamon. That shall replace the beep.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Again, I thought we were going to be a lock with mugs, but now I am not so sure.
I am very intrigued by this innovation. I would quibble with cinnamon because the next time someone walks past an IHOP or, God forbid, a Starbucks in the holiday season.
Well, and I would like to say it is innovative in this application, but Disneyland's been doing this for decades. What's they that? Spray this shit, the scent in it, so you know you're in Frontierland.
To get you out of here?
Oh, yeah. I'm serious. Right. So, God, I do like a rinse in time saves nine. I like the evolution of it. It definitely makes more sense than a stitch. I don't know who anyone else who darn sucks.
We can replace the cinnamon with that's the fart smell.
Yeah, yeah.
Which it's probably better to do something.
What is
like
that? It's God, there's a
sulfur.
Sulfur. Just a little sulfur, yeah. Because then you're standing with your back and you're like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I don't know if he's allowed to amend his own.
Yeah, you're right. Don't factor it in.
If you live by the tar pits, you're constantly jumping out of the way.
That's a good point.
What do we do?
I'm leaning towards the innovation, which really impressed me. So I'm
going
to go.
You're going backup beepers? Let's do it.
And like the state itself, someone is leaving the California conference. Will it be Barbara Ferrer or the LA Marathon?
Barbara Ferrer. Barbara the Hair Ferrer. Fucking her hair looks like Medusa was raped by a mop. Okay, and this is my point. From now on, we need someone who gives a shit about their hair. Because the entire pandemic, every fucking middle-aged chick I spoke to, they didn't give a fuck about the schools closing down, the restaurants, Disney. They didn't give a fuck about any of it, but their hair, the salon. Oh, what about my roots? What about the gray? That motivated them all. They all fucking got out of the house. They went to speakeasies. They went to garages. It was a full fucking Fight Club situation going on with women. All heavily motivated by hair. Again, fuck the kids, fuck the unions, fuck employment, fuck the economy, but my hair, now you've got my attention, and I'm snapping into action. So we can no longer have bitches who don't care about their hair in charge of policy. Next time, we have Kathy Ireland. She's the right age, she has wonderful hair, and she gives a shit about it. L.A. Marathon. Let's open this up to everyone. Sure, everyone trains. The Kenyans fucking win every year. Blah, blah, blah. You prove something to yourself, we get it. Well, what about the fat, red-headed gamers? What about the pasty kids that are sitting in their basement? What about those guys who want to go out and compete? And then what about us who have to watch it, who are outside of the lame family sergeant, cheering them on and holding a fucking smart water at the fucking finish line? How about we add some innovation? How about we add some strategy? And the strategy now for a fucking marathon is run your ass off and see if you can keep up with the Kenyans. How about some golden scooters? How about there's golden scooters placed around? How about a dumpster with a ticket in it that skip you ahead 5 miles? Let's open this up to strategy. Have some, hey, I got the golden ticket. That Kenya's got to carry me piggyback for the next 7 blocks. Open it up and then have some fat redhead pasty gamer crossing the finish line 20 minutes ahead of the Kenyans. That I would watch.
I am having a very, very tough time with this because he described me to a T. I had many speakeasy haircuts during the pandemic, but there was some fucking genius buried in that marathon rant.
I'm going to have to lean on you for the hair insights because to me it was all white noise.
Right.
I had no idea what he was talking
I was calling
about.
People to my back porch. Everything he described, it was like he had a nanny cam in my house.
Interesting.
So this is an interesting take on why Ferrer is doing such a bad job. But I love the Candyland approach to LA Marathon. Do we farm this out to Dawson?
I'm on board with you. I like the LA Marathon.
Should we go? Because I want to see what other innovations. I like the golden scooter a lot.
Yeah, I like the Kenyan carrying you. They're skinny people, but they're strong.
LA Marathon it is.
Much like my hair in middle school, Barbara Ferrer's out.
Right.
So backup beepers. And the LA Marathon will move on to the Furious Four. Tune in tomorrow for the two matchups of the Furious Four to find out who goes to the championship of March Madness Madness.
All right, the dear, dear Judd Apatow is going to join us right after this. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with Geico. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to Geico. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
In the spirit of Murrow, Jennings, Cronkite, here's another great moment in local news.
Oh, the things you'll see working the late shift as a gas station clerk. The customer in the colorful hoodie decided to leave his mark, literally using a snack rack as a urinal.
Here we go.
But wait, now the crew helps themselves to some free snacks, even the soiled ones on the ground.
It's in the bathroom. Don't put on my chips. Now I can't buy chips for 2 weeks.
That's a great moment in local news. Now, back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Judd Apatow, writer, director, producer, comedian, has joined us. Got a book out called Sicker in the Head, More Conversations About Life and Comedy. And then also, that's available now on Amazon. And then the movie The Bubble, which is available now on Netflix, which is a star-studded affair. Good to see you again, Judd.
It's good to be here with you all. How is it going?
Good. It strikes me that you started off as sort of the keeper of comedy when we spoke about all those early interviews you would do with comedians as a 15-year-old boy, maybe even younger. And now it just seems like you're the creator but curator of like all things comedy. Is that a heavy burden? Is the crown heavy?
Well, you know, I think it's just that, you know, I've always been just a fan of it. And I've loved documentaries for a long time, like you. And so part of it is, you know, I interviewed people as a kid, and I just finished a documentary about George Carlin that's going to be on HBO in May. And I just like going deeper. As I get older, I just really am fascinated with, you know, what went wrong in their lives that made them funny? How did they try to keep their shit together? How did they try to stay funny over long periods of time? Did they get wiser? Did they lose their minds? Like, all of that is really interesting to me.
Well, the Carlin, I think it's a two-part doc that's coming out.
Yep.
And you couldn't get all of him in one part, that's for damn sure. I was always a huge Carlin fan. Everyone is a huge Carlin fan. But I didn't know a lot about him, like, personally. Were there things that were revelations to you?
The funny thing about Carlin was, you know, he had no jokes about his family. He didn't do bits about his daughter, about his wife, and it was all social commentary or little observations that he did. And he had a really tumultuous time. He was a cocaine addict for a very long time, going on multiple day binges, always by himself. He didn't like to party with people. He liked to sit and write, listen to music. And I think that certainly like hurt him physically. He died of a heart attack, and he was obsessed with language and words and would just sit there for hours and hours writing these amazing routines, and was a little bit of a loner. Like, he didn't like to hang. Like, you never hear stories of him hanging with all the comics.
The also in the doc department, the Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling, which came out in 2018, which I enjoyed very much, was very well done. And I mean, I suppose you are a person that if you aim your tractor beam towards something, it will be, and you don't have to agree, I'll just lavish this on you, but it's going to be good. It's going to be good, because it's sort of, and then maybe, you know, being the Swiss Army knife of comedy, you can use that if you want. I mean, I was listening to you being interviewed on Spade's podcast, and it was like, you forget, you know, SNL, writing SNL, writing for Roseanne, writing jokes for comedians, and working with Norm Macdonald, like way, way back, like always a Ben Stiller early, you know, just TV, docs, features, books. I mean, do you just feel like if you can concentrate on a subject, you will bring it to life?
The main thing is that I'm old. I can't believe I'm old now. Like, I have stories that are like 35 years old. You know, like when me and David Spade talk about, you know, the early days, it's like 35 years ago. when he lived down the street. When I lived with Sandler, and Rob Schneider lived across the street. And but I was the same then. Like, I was obsessed with just anyone who was funny. Like, I remember hearing Norm Macdonald and then seeing him on TV in the 1990 or 89 or something. And I remember showing the tape to Sandler and going, isn't this guy amazing? Isn't he going to be big? And Sandler would be like, who cares? I want to be big. I don't care about this guy. And I was the fanboy. Everyone else was so hungry to succeed, but I was nerding out on how good everyone else was. And then, of course, Sandler becomes one of Norm's biggest supporters and puts him in tons of movies and tours with him for years. But as a young guy, I was blown away when I would meet anyone new who was great.
Brian's got one after this, but you know, as I was listening to you being interviewed, I realized that you sort of took the added value road, and everyone else in comedy, stand up especially, they took the lone wolf, narcissistic, not necessarily in a horrible way, but you know, stand up is you alone on stage. You don't have a bass player and a drummer and a lead guitar. It's just you. It's an endeavor. It's a solo endeavor. And so I think a lot of guys were like, how do I make my star brighter? How do I get onto this? How do I? And Judd was like, how do I help other people and get involved with other people and make them better? And then that ended up making you so diverse that there was actually more success than if you'd turned in and went, how do I get my own HBO special?
Yeah, I think that's right in terms of my philosophy, because as a kid who loved comedy, my dream was that any of those people would talk to me and that I would be a part of it. I didn't think like, oh, I must be the star. I just thought, wouldn't it be great to like be one of the writers of Saturday Night Live and to be part of these groups like Second City TV or Monty Python. I wanted the community of it probably most of all. And I also, I think it's fun to try to figure out how to make other people funny. So when we start a movie and we're like, how do you make Kumail Nanjiani the lead of a movie where he kills and it's emotional, like the challenge of helping him and Emily pull that off, that's the thing that seems really interesting to me.
Brian?
Well, I do have a question. It's about that, but real quick, a fun bit of trivia, bring it a full circle. First ever host of SNL, George Carlin.
George Carlin, yeah. He was the first host of SNL, and he did the football-baseball routine. He did.
Oh, it's a great bit.
Yeah.
That's back when the host, and, he didn't do any sketches. He just he did stand up here and there.
Did
follow-up question of what you were just talking about, because Judd, it's the most interesting part of your career for me, which is you talked about it with Kumail, but talk about how you with Amy Schumer or with
Pete Davidson
or Kumail or anyone, you take someone who is funny and has talent and they're on their way, but you somehow synthesize and extrapolate that whatever makes them special into a full length movie or narrative or whatever. Talk about that chemistry, that alchemy.
Well, some of it is just, you know, as a kid, I used to see people on TV and wish there was more of them to watch. So I remember watching Michael Keaton on the Mike Douglas Show. And I thought, man, if there was a movie with this guy, I would love to watch it. You know, and that was before whatever Mr. Mom and Night Shift came out. And I think even now when I watch comedians in a comedy club, it doesn't really matter if they're famous or not. I just every once in a while get a sense like, oh, if this person had the movie, it would be the great movie. And a lot of these people have stories. Amy Schumer had an amazing story. Pete Davidson has a really like tragic but emotional story. And then I just think, well, I'd like to help him try to figure that out. And it is a little like therapy. You sit and you talk and you say, you know, what are you going through? And how do you think in a story you would solve your problem?
Yeah, it seems to me that a lot of your approach to comedy is sort of from the therapist approach. And I've always liked that kind of comedy, too. I've never really thought that comedy and psychiatry or psychology, we're very far apart. I feel like they lived in the same place. It's just there's a little twist on on the comedy side that makes everyone laugh, but they have to all think that way. It has to be kind of an understanding. They have to vibe on it. And it has your comedy evolved as your therapy has evolved?
Probably. I just find some courage to try to go deeper. Like working with Pete Davidson, you know, I'm scared. I want to do right by Pete as his collaborator. I know that it's all sensitive stuff. It's all about grief and trauma. And how do you make a story out of that that's, you know, mainly fictionalized that respects him and his family and his journey and make it really funny, you know, a lot of the time. But I think as I've gotten to know myself better, I can help other people figure that out. Because how I always explain it to people is, it's almost like we're writing a movie where we're creating a story where someone crashes. And if they were to learn the lesson, what would the crash need to be to get you to figure out your stuff and change?
The Gina's got one right after this. It's funny. Well, not funny, but Ivan Reitman passed recently, and I've told the story before, but Judd, obviously the 40-year-old virgin, is one of the funniest movies ever made. And I told Judd that Jimmy Kimmel and I pitched that story to Reitman. It would have been the 36-year-old version of the 40-year-old virgin. And even a guy you've worked with, the Tim Herlihy, ended up, we found ourselves sitting in a hotel room in New York with Tim Herlihy punching it up. He kind of punched it a little more sideways than up. But either way, I could remember Reitman yelling at us, nobody's going to believe there's a 36-year-old virgin. And in our story, Jimmy was the virgin. I was his buddy. I had to get him laid. We ended up in Mexico, blah, blah, blah. And Reitman's like, nobody's going to believe that. And then 3 years later.
The magic's in the age, buddy. Right. It's in the age.
He needed to be 4 years older. He
I know.
An even 40 number. But, you know, when I was working on that with Carell, and that was Carell's idea. It was based on a sketch he had experimented with but never finished at Second City in Chicago, about a guy at a poker game and everyone trades sex stories. And he clearly is making his up.
And so he's talking like about a bag of sand.
Yeah. The weird one was that, and you know, you put your hand down a girl's pants, you know how it smells like baby powder? That was the one that he pitched that to me. And I said, well, if you did that really real and human, it would be very funny. And I pitched everybody, and most everyone turned it down for the same reason you got turned down. And then finally, we were able to get it set up at Universal. But I was doing a movie at DreamWorks at the time and pitched it to them. I was just finishing up Anchorman. And I said, let's do Carell now. And here's the idea. And they didn't go for it. And then I told Sony and they didn't go for it. So it wasn't that easy to get set up.
Yeah, Gina.
Question about your kids, and then a story I would love for you to confirm, hopefully not deny, but we'll find out. Your daughters are amazing, you know that. And I mean, I remember Iris was in Love, right? And Maude, of course, in Euphoria steals the show. How involved are you in coaching them? Is that natural? I mean, they're obviously born actresses. How does that work?
Well, they started acting when they were really little in a bunch of my movies, mainly because I didn't want to meet other people's kids. I just thought it'd be fun to hang out with my kids. And then it's almost like home movies, and we'd have all this incredible film. And they turned out to be really funny and interesting. And by doing it, you know, it'd be every couple of years, they got very confident on the set. They weren't scared of 80 people staring at them.
Right.
And by working with, you know, a lot of great people, they just picked up on it in the way like a little kid might get good at the piano. And it's all we talk about at the house. You know, sometimes I think, was it unfair of me? Because if I talked about dentistry all the time, maybe they would have been amazing oral surgeons. But I only talked about jokes and acting and stories. So I don't really help them now other than, you know, say, you know, everything's going to go better if you get more sleep. You know, like I'm not really coaching them other than like the basic of like, take good care of yourself. It's a hard job. It's a little bit of a marathon of work. And the healthier you are, the more you'll have good brain energy to put into the performance.
It's the family business.
If you just talked about dentistry, you'd probably give them an eating disorder. I don't think they'd become oral surgeons. I think they'd hate your guts, they transition, and they'd have an eating disorder if it was just dentistry.
Yeah. I would love to – I heard a story on the one of the comedy networks on Sirius one time, and I would love for you to confirm or deny this if you know. Okay. A story that has stuck with me for a couple of years when I heard something to the effect of when you were young and you were writing to Steve Martin, who I guess is a – you know, you were a big fan, talk about fanboy, and he hadn't written back and you were writing him more. And finally, it kind of got ugly. Like you sent him some sort of a nasty letter to which he responded, "Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were the Judd Apatow before you were the Judd Apatow." That is one of my favorite stories, and I hope it's true.
Well, it is basically true. But what's so weird is it was 42 years ago. I mean, that's the weirdest part about the story, is how old the story is. But I knew where he lived, and I was like 13, and I would always ask my grandmother to pass by his house. So anywhere we went, we had to pass by his house. And one day he was out front, and I asked for his autograph. And as he should, he said no. Because, you know, and he said, he goes, "I don't want everyone knocking on my door." And so I didn't understand that as a kid. So I wrote him a long letter saying, you know, "You would live in that house if I didn't buy all your records and all your movies. And if you don't send me an apology, I'm going to send your address to Homes of the Stars. And you'll have tour buses passing by 24 hours a day." And then like 4 months later, I got a book of Cruel Shoes, a book he had put out. And that was the inscription, is to Judd, "I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was speaking to the Judd Apatow." But I was 13 years old.
Fantastic.
At the time. And we did a photo for Vanity Fair like 10 years ago where he was running a tour bus in front of my house. And I was yelling at him in my bathroom. And it was just a great day because he's the best. I mean, he's the one that made so many of us want to do comedy. And the fact that I think he thought my letter was funny. Like, he wrote back because he laughed at it. And on some level, it gave me some confidence if I could make the funniest person in the world think it was worth responding.
Such a great story.
The only celebrity that lived anywhere near me was Grandpa Al Lewis.
Yeah, and that's a good one, though.
It's good, but he didn't have the legs, you know, the upside that Steve Martin has. There'll be no Vanity Fair shoots in the future. Yeah,
well, that was when I visited my grandma. When I was a kid, the only person that lived near us was Mort Drucker, who drew all of the cartoons for the big article in Mad Magazine.
Wow.
And he lived in the neighborhood, and Bobby Nystrom from the Islanders. That was our two celebrities.
The writing the book, Sicker in the Head, which is the follow-up to Sick in the Head from 2016. And I'm looking at Letterman and Will Ferrell and John Mulaney and Pete Davidson, Whoopi Goldberg. Here's a philosophical question, because guys like Letterman strike me as they're geniuses, but they feel troubled to me. I always feel like there's some sort of internal battle that's keeping them from true happiness. But you've interviewed him and went in depth with him. And I'm curious, like, who is the happiest of all the comedians? Is it Sandler? Is it Will Ferrell?
Who's the least tortured?
Yeah, it's not Letterman. Yeah. Who?
That's a very good question. Who is the least of everyone? The least tortured. I mean, certainly there could be a very good argument that it's Will Ferrell, and that his comedy comes from a very joyous, absurd, intelligent place, because I've never seen him in a weird space other than if like someone was rude or disrespectful to someone else, he really does not like that. That's the thing where he will be unhappy and let that be known. He's very protective of people being treated well, but he is a happy person. I think that's what we like about him. It's just pure joy. It's not like through that veil of where Shandling, you felt the torture, you felt the overthinking and how troubled he was. And you related to that in a way. But Will, it is a pure funny. And there's not that many people like that who are you just see them and they're just hard funny. Like the second they start talking, like Kate McKinnon, who's in our movie, or Fred Armisen, they're just pure fun.
Yeah. Fred is very, I don't want to say underrated in the community, but maybe by society at large. And just like, yeah, if you could put him in a, you know, if you could take people, comedians, and put them in a Cuisinart and see how much funny poured into the glass, yes, Fred's would overflow, but you wouldn't know it. You'd think he'd be in at 7 ounces and meanwhile just be pouring over the top of that tumbler. So he's so versatile. He did a Crank, yes, Yankers. Chris, you can look for it. Maybe we'll play it later. He did a Crank Yankers episode for us as an American Indian, and it was just funny as shit, but it was super quiet. And the reason it was funny is it wasn't cartoon character, right, American Indian. It was super low-key American Indian. I will add a quiet dark horse to the happy comedian department. He's just on my mind because I think I might go over to his shop after this. Jay Leno. Now, Jay Leno doesn't walk around whistling and clicking his heels together. He's just never in a bad mood. He's always even. Yeah. You can always just talk about anything with him. He never talks shit about, sure, anybody else. He's going about his life.
Even
he's,
if his Chick-fil-A order gets even,
oh, he still he won't even mention
it. I fucked up his Chick-fil-A order. He was fine eating my fries. Like, yeah, he is in Burbank working on a motorcycle right now. And yeah, it, without not a care in the world,
nary a care,
not thinking about the young bucks coming up nipping at his heels or where's his.
He's so nice, Jay. I mean, when I think of all the times he's been kind to me, first of all, I interviewed him when I was 16 years old at Rascals in West Orange, New Jersey, and he was so cool. There's a hilarious picture of it out there. And then when I wanted to write comedy, Kevin Rooney, the great comedian and writer who worked with Jay a lot, gave a bunch of my monologue jokes to give to him to potentially do on The Tonight Show. And he called my house at like midnight. I live with my grandmother. My grandmother wakes me up. She's like, Jay Leno's on the phone.
At 16?
And this is like when I was like 19 or 20. And I pick up the phone and it's Leno basically telling me he doesn't like my jokes, but in the nicest way. He's just like, you know, you're close, you know, but you should keep trying. And then, you know, later on, I would go do that show and he would come in and chat. And when I made This Is 40, he called me and he's like, Judd, you know, I saw the movie. It's just terrific. It's just great. And, you know, I don't always call.
Yeah, and so here's an interesting thing from a guy who lived through it, in Judd Apatow. There was the late night war thing, and there was the, yeah, Leno camp, and there was the Letterman camp. Mm-hmm. And all, first off, I had to practically live with Jimmy Kimmel, who was an insane Letterman. Like, I mean, yeah, his vanity license plate on his Isuzu iMark said like late night, yeah, on it. He had the, yeah, late night bomber jacket,
he had the Letterman jacket. Right?
He had a Letterman. I mean, at 15, 16, I mean, he was ensconced. Like, he was, and you, it was Coke versus Pepsi. You had to declare major. You couldn't just go, well, I like the Raiders and the Rams. Oh, no. You had to pick a side. And there's this thing where it's like, Letterman's a genius. And I think, creatively, we all kind of vibed with Letterman, but then we turned Leno into a douche. Fuck that guy. And it was like, I don't know, he seems pretty cool to me. And we got into this camp, and as it turns out, Leno turned out to be a pretty nice guy. But what's your head on that?
I mean, I never bought into any of it either way. When I was a kid, no one was funnier than Leno. He would go on Letterman and murder. I saw him live a ton of times, headlining at the Improv, and then he got his show, and I think he made a decision to be a solid, middle-of-the-road, almost, you know, whatever, Bob Hope, Carson-esque type of person, and he did that show for decades and was insanely successful and was so nice to so many people that the idea that people are actually upset about who do you like better. Like, I didn't understand, like, Bill Hicks being so mad, oh, that Jay Leno did a Pringles commercial. I mean, look now. Everyone does a commercial. The Who does a commercial. Bob Dylan does a commercial. And he crucified, yeah, Leno for doing a commercial like he had sold his soul to the Lay's Corporation. I never thought that any of that was fair. And obviously, Letterman, you know, I went to a show the first 3 months of Letterman. I went and saw Robert Klein on Letterman in like 82, 80, I forgot what year the show started. So I was always obsessed with Letterman also. But you know, it's like rap, you know, people being mad at each other. It just hyped up the whole thing. When I worked at Larry Sanders, you know, everyone was writing stories about, you know, the need to succeed that drives everyone nuts and makes everyone competitive. And maybe it was good for all of them to just be in the news talking about their shows.
Quick break to talk about Solo Stove. Nothing like gathering around the fire on a cool evening. A smokeless fire pit from Solo Stove makes your outdoor moments even more memorable. And right now, you get a great deal on a Solo Stove fire pit. These things are beautiful. I have two of them now. They're pretty heavy duty. I mean, the beautiful stainless steel. It's a premium grade 304 stainless steel, to be exact. 360-degree airflow system that maximizes efficiency while minimizing smoke. You can bring them just about anywhere. They burn beautifully and efficiently. And it really adds so much to your experience, especially, you know, outdoors, on the deck, where have you. Easy to light with just a few bits of starter, perfectly portable. Take Solo Stove with you camping and wherever you go. It's Solo Stove, right, Dawson?
Shop now and get up to 30% off fire pits all month long. And use promo code Adam at checkout to get an extra $20 off, plus a lifetime warranty and free 30-day returns. Just go to solostove.com. And remember, you get $20 off when you use promo code Adam.
What are everything for you, or most things for you, seems about story and comedy and docs and then the family, but the family's woven into the stories as well. Good thing everyone's good. Is there some part of you that does other things? Like, I don't mean to sound sort of condescending, but I just mean, do you split your time?
What else am I doing?
What I mean, the aforementioned Leno is in his garage right now fucking around with motorcycles. He has no thoughts about comedy.
Do you have a model train set, perchance?
Yes.
Do I have a hobby is the question. Well, I mean, I think all this stuff is leisure in a way. There's pressure to it. But, you know, leisure for me is to do a show at Largo and, you know, convince someone like Beck to do a benefit with me. I mean, so most of it is fun hanging with your pals, trying to think of stupid stuff that makes people laugh. Outside of that, I mean, I spend time with my family and my kids, and I'm usually just doing what they want to do. You know how that works. They go, hey, let's go shop for 6 hours. And you have just decided in life that you will make that completely enjoyable, even though there's no part of you that wants to do it.
Is there part that causes friction in that I find myself going to my daughter's volleyball games, which can go up to 9.5 hours, by the way. It's not one game. It's an entire burnt Saturday in Orange County. And I'm just sitting there. And I realize I'm going to be sitting here for between 7 and 11 hours. And I look at that as a colossal waste of my Saturday. Not that I don't enjoy watching her, but somewhere...
we got the message.
Somewhere,
loud and clear.
My fantasy is to go to whoever organizes this stuff and go, hey, would you like to watch me do stand-up? And they'd go, yeah, that'd be awesome. And I go, how about for 11 fucking hours?
But if I move on to the next round, we come back in three.
Yes.
Well, I discourage all sports from both daughters.
Good.
Because of that.
But
I literally thought to myself, I'm not doing this. And then out of the blue, my youngest decides she wants to do competitive cheerleading. So for 2 years, I'm like getting on planes to go to like Vegas or Sacramento. And then finally, she just naturally lost interest, and I just was so happy. Even though I enjoy watching her do it,
I know.
Like I was always like against being the screaming parent, and it's also terrifying. Like they'd lift her up, and I'd be like you better hold her steady. You better hold her steady.
Well,
like there was it's scary.
It's essentially what happens when a loved one dies in hospice care. You're like, I'm glad. I mean, they're out of pain now. I'm out of pain. I mean, I loved him. I loved Nana. Don't get me wrong, but I'm glad. I'm glad they stopped doing this thing. They're in a better place.
We're all in a better place.
I'm in a better place called fucking home. but the question was, is I find myself and I go, look, I'm going to be sitting up here for 9 hours. I got to bring a buck slip. And I got to make some notes. Like, I'm going to have ideas. I got to write something down. I got to have some ideas. So now, at some point, she'll look up at me and she'll see me inevitably looking down and writing something down. And then she'll think I'm checked out or tuned out. And so in the family.
Nice set.
Yeah, it can cause a little because you are always somewhere in your head. You're always kind of like, oh, that would be a funny idea for Pete, you know, whatever that is, which makes you your highest attention level they're ever going to get from you is 73%. They're never going to get 100.
Well, yeah. Well, I think, you know, these things for me, you know, I'm about to have my 25th anniversary, have been negotiated over many decades of like, if we go shopping, I will have to, you know, talk to the girls and say, do you mind if I sit while you look at the shoes? And some days they're like, no, look at the shoes with me. And the idea of zoning out or like just scrolling the phone, it does take a while to go, oh, that's like really offensive to the fact that you're with people. I mean, they say like presence is the best gift you can give people, but also I don't care about the shoes. And you, at some point you are trying to get across, I love you and I am going to look at every shoe with you. And usually they sense my lack of interest, even though I'm pretending, and they ask me to sit down.
Well, you're already head and shoulders above all the other dads because you're asking permission to sit down as opposed to I will be over here. Let me know when you're done.
Well, can I say this? It's not a two-way street. It's like, I like cars. I'm going to say to my daughter, we're going to go rim shopping today. I want you just to hang out while I look at some rims for my race car. Like,
do you say rings? That sounds great.
I wouldn't put you through that misery. You don't like it.
Yes, you're right. There's no activity. Like I live with three women. Well, two of them have just moved out. There's no activity that's my version of shopping that they will do with me for hours and hours and hours. And if I get them to do whatever that might be, go to a store to buy, you know, autographs or some dumb thing I'm interested in, I get 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will not get a marathon.
Yes. All you get, you basically get shit they want to do. And hiking, which is a neutral, that's right in the middle. Hiking is the one thing that does not favor feminine or masculine one iota. There's that. But anything north of hiking, they're out. And that's
true.
That's the real problem. So they talk about the double standard, Gina, but I think we have one working our own.
We get it. We're suffering here, too.
Yeah, so Letterman, sorry. How long did you interview Letterman? I'm fascinated with him.
And it was probably almost 2 hours. And, you know, he's so nice a person. I heard him on Mark Maron's podcast, and he was so open about the fact that he was obsessed with his show doing well every day, but in a way, the anxiety and focus of that made him miss it. Like he felt like he had missed a lot of the experience due to the intensity of it. And I feel like he's just so nice and in a better space and reflective about the experience and very open about it. And for us who never had access to Letterman, he was never at a party. He was never someone that you would see around. The fact that now he is a little bit, and you might get that chance to talk about, hey, how was that for you? What was that like? Feels fantastic. And at the end of the interview, I said to him, I said, I really want to say this to you. And I want to thank you because you inspired so many of us to go into comedy, inspired how we do comedy. And so many of us you put on the show and changed our lives. And I just want to thank you. And he got very uncomfortable and just said, that's right. There'd be no comedy without me.
Well, let me give some plugs out. The movie, The Bubble, it's available now on Netflix, and it is star-studded with great performances all the way around. And the book, Sicker in the Head, More conversations about life and comedy. That's available now on Amazon. And then we can look forward to the two-part George Carlin doc in May on HBO. Look at
that,
right?
Correct.
Which, yes, sir. I really look forward to, and I hope that you keep going down this road of making docs with comedians, because the Shanling one was amazing. Just amazing.
What's your next doc? What's the next one that's landing?
I'm working on a multi-parter, which is K-Rock, the radio station out here.
Yes.
Seems,
I've heard of this. What's the timing when I get to see
Doc
this?
Worthy? Well, you can working come over. It. You can come over to the shop and see the dailies. I'm working on one. Coincidentally, a Bobby Rahal one. Letterman Rahal own an indie team, so that's the other side of Letterman Rahal racing. Working on one about Dan Gurney, who I don't know if you guys know, he was like the biggest race car winner in the world, and but an innovator, and he built all this stuff. But the other thing about Dan Gurney, he was 6'4" and looked like Dolph Lundgren. And if you find the right picture of Dan Gurney, because he was like matinee idol, won every race, and then started building cars that won every race and just kept going. They invented something for him. You saw the Ford v Ferrari,
yep.
And they're like the car, the GT40, the Ford GT40. It's called GT40 because it's 40 inches. The roof's only 40 inches out there. He's the guy. He's 6'4". He couldn't get in that car. They invented something called the Gurney bubble, blister, a bubble on top of the roof where his helmet would be.
Like that's very Fred Flintstone.
It's like a gunner's turret on the top.
Yeah, so he's a really interesting guy. But, you know, I just made this note, and I'll just put it out. He also, Dan Gurney, invented spraying champagne. I know it sounds weird, but he won Le Mans in the late 60s, and he got up on the podium, and he started spraying. It was considered exquisitely rude to spray camera people, reporters, and stuff. But he invented the thing that everyone does now all the time. So kind of an interesting story with him. But also for you, in the Pete Davidson mold, I was interviewing on the show the other Friday last week, Gabriel Iglesias, Fluffy. And he's telling me, he's added a second show to his Dodger Stadium show. So he's sold out.
Yeah,
now, we couldn't incredible. Do that unless we paired up. I would feature. Man, but he sold
out. That's rough.
He sold with who?
45,000 tickets have been sold, and we must add a second show. But his crazy upbringing, poverty, what he had to go through, like sleeping. And he's a good actor. He can act. And I thought, weirdly, that he's dealing with his weight all the times, had a lot of adversity. Now he's selling out Dodger Stadium, like started off in miniature clubs in Long Beach and really bad parts of town. Dad was in a mariachi band, never met him.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like there's some meat, pardon the pun, on that bone. And
and if you notice they don't make that many movies for that community, like big comedy. So you have a guy like that, he's selling out Dodger Stadium two nights in a row. Why aren't there an enormous amount of Latinx big like Kevin Hart comedies?
Yeah.
You know, that's like the weird thing about the system, because clearly, you know, there are people that feel like, well, where's my comedy? I'm willing to sit at the top row of Dodger Stadium to go.
Yeah. And it's like, again, I think what we do as a business is we go, let's have that guy be the goofy guy in the sitcom with the laugh track. But a real kind of train wreck.
Right.
Pete Davidson kind of deep dive on him for that community. You'd be a hero, Judd. You're already a hero to the Jews. What about the Latino?
That's a good
pitch. Spread it out. I'm spreading it out. I've done Ashkenazis and Sephardics. I got to widen my path.
All right. Food for thought. Judd, always great to see you, my friend.
Great to see all of you. Thank you so much.
Take care. All right, let me tell you about Meguiar's. Yeah, car waxes. They've come a long way over the last few years. Meguiar's launched the next generation of protective products specifically geared toward DIYers. Hybrid ceramic spray wax, Meguiar's hybrid ceramic liquid wax, hybrid ceramic spray detailer, hybrid ceramic wash and wax, and the hybrid wash glove as well. For 2022, Meguiar's has introduced hybrid ceramic pre-wax prep. Revive paint easily. Get out there. Get rid of those swirl marks and those minor defects and scratches. Hybrid ceramic trim restorer for the people that have all the plastic that turns white and gray. Bring it back to its beautiful black luster. Restores darkness and shine to the exterior trim. Now, Meguiar's has a hybrid ceramic solution for everyone for incredible water beading and protection, durability beyond traditional wax. It's ceramic made easy with Meguiar's. All right, quick break. Back with Rotten Tomatoes right after this.
Stream the biggest movies and TV shows for free on Pluto TV. Watch movies like Titanic and G.I. Joe The Rise of Cobra, plus TV shows like CSI and Star Trek The Next Generation. Starting this month, check out the 24/7 Stargate channel exclusively on Pluto TV, plus hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows absolutely free. Download the free Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start watching today.